acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 41, A Witness to Color. Sunday, June 8th, 2014. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yin Hu Cha Yuan, Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode can be found on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. You can also find me on Ravelry, Twitter, and Instagram as Sarah Pomegranate. Yarns at Yin Hu has a Facebook page and is available on iTunes. This week I heard from listeners Nancy from Washington, who is Sock Sticks on Ravelry, Marianne of Three Waters Farm in North Carolina, and I had a very special visit with Mary Beth from Pittsburgh. She is out of this world on Ravelry, and she has been hiking a section of the Appalachian Trail. We met and spoke a little bit at Maryland Sheep and Wool and exchanged phone numbers, and I said, hey, when you get to Delaware Water Gap, call me and we'll get together. And she did, and she came over. She brought her knitting. We had a very nice evening on the porch just catching up. It was a really great visit, and I learned a lot about Mary Beth and also about being a through hiker. She is not hiking the entire Appalachian Trail in one go. She's broken it into several parts, and she met a couple last summer when she was hiking further south, and they are hiking together again. Mary Beth is hiking ultralight, and I had first heard about this style of ultralight hiking when Paula of the Knitting Pipeline podcast was talking about her son hiking a portion of a trail out west and all of the measures he took to keep his pack and his gear ultralight. Mary Beth was telling Samuel and me about some of the measures she's taken to keep her gear light, some of the things that she foregoes, and ultimately why it's much easier and a lot more fun to hike keeping things ultralight. No surprise, Mary Beth is knitting a hitchhiker with some very special yarn. She will be coming off the trail near the end of June, and we will reunite at the Super Summer Knit Together in Nashville. So I am sending good thoughts out over the airwaves to Mary Beth, but it was great to see her in person again and to share some of her trail stories for an evening. In other news, the comments continue on the May Amaranth thread. Some folks have championed the cause and are continuing to cook with amaranth. For the Bulk Bins cook-along, June is a wild card month. Time to experiment, time to regroup. I will be trying my hand at making some pizza dough with the help from a free class on Craftsy and also some cookbooks I've accumulated. I have a pizza stone for our Big Green Egg charcoal grill, and I really would like to grill pizza out there. So far, my efforts at dough have not met with much success, but I'm going to keep on keeping on, and I hope you keep experimenting with ingredients from the bulk bins in your local supermarket. The Asymmetrical, a craft along for an asymmetrical garment or accessory, doesn't begin until August 1st, but there is a planning thread open now, and many folks have identified some of Simone Ike's patterns as potential for knitting for the craft along. And I'd like to mention everyone who has so far expressed interest in joining the craft along and who has posted at least once to the planning thread. So here they are: 100 Projects, RMH258, Marianne H, Quilty Kim Knits 2, X Farm Girl, Crafty Josie, YV Haya, Jenny Heiss 56, Dyla, B Star Stuff, Smith MKS, Sally from Idaho, Spinners and Farm, Swensty, and Kay Connors. Also commenting on the thread has been Wushel Tigger, who is Simone Eich from Woolwork, and she is generously giving away 5 of her patterns for this knit along. How do you win a pattern? Well, you post a link to an asymmetrical pattern of Simone's that you would like to knit for the asymmetrical, and you could be a winner. I will choose the winners in mid-July. And if you are a spinner, take a look at Simone's patterns, because she was commenting on the thread that she has specifically designed some of her patterns, thinking about the qualities of hand spun and imagining folks knitting them with their hand spun. I'm not sure if I have mentioned this in previous episodes, but it is perfectly acceptable and even encouraged to double, triple, quadruple dip into this craft along and other knit alongs, spin alongs, or craft alongs that you may be participating in over the summer. Rather than recording my regular podcast segments this episode, I'm going to devote the rest of this podcast to a conversation with Patricia Bricino from BZB Fibers near San Francisco, California. It's been almost exactly 1 year since I made my first purchase from BZB Fibers. I heard about the Etsy store because I was searching stashes of fellow Ravelry members and looking to see if they had made any notes about the Etsy sellers. And I saw some very nice things about BZB Fibers. So I searched the Etsy shop and made a purchase of Blueface Lester comb top dyed in Woodland Gnome colorway. When it came, it was very nicely packaged. It had a beautiful lavender sachet, and I had an incredible spinning experience, spinning the yarn as thin as I could and chain plying it to preserve all of the wonderful color changes. And then I knit my first hand-spun, hand-knit shawl. Since that time, I have been a repeat customer of BZB Fibers, and the only thing really holding me back from more and more purchases is that I'm not an incredibly fast spinner. I really admire Patricia's sense of color, her attention to detail, and her personalized customer service. She always includes a handwritten note with the fiber that I order, and over time we've developed a relationship. She's also been incredibly generous and has contributed one of the prizes for our upcoming craft along. It's one of my goals to include interviews as part of the Yarns at Yinhu podcast, and I would have very much liked to meet with Patricia and record an interview in person, but since she's all the way in San Francisco and I'm all the way over here in Delaware Water Gap, we decided to exchange audio files instead. And Patricia has been very generous with her time and has given incredibly thoughtful, illuminating answers to the questions that I posed. I'm calling this episode A Witness to Color because one of the questions I asked about her use of color and her understanding of color. In her answer, she used the term witnessing color. And I think that's such a powerful word to use, and I think it is emblematic of her approach to dyeing yarn and dyeing fiber. I started the interview with the question that I will always ask of my interview subjects, which is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how prepared are you for the apocalypse? Before I get started with Patricia's responses to the questions, I just want to remind listeners that there are photographs as well as links to Patricia's shop and blog on the Yarns at Yinhu website. I hope you enjoy this interview with Patricia of BZB Fibers.
Hi, Sarah. This is Patricia, and this is going to be fun. So the first question is, how am I going to be ready for the apocalypse? Well, I have a few essentials. I have plenty of wool that will last me a lifetime. I have wine. I have chocolate. I know that I need to work on my canned food because I usually tend to buy everything fresh, but I have to work on that. We have an emergency kit here in the house because we are very prone to earthquakes. So we are ready on that part. I don't have an evacuation plan, but I can imagine that I can probably jump on lagoon if there is a problem. But I'm not sure if the zombies actually swim. Anyway, I think I'm training a little bit so I can run. At least I can do that. So I think I have a few things that I need to do to improve my my readiness for an apocalypse.
I am always curious about how someone's sense of place influences aspects of their work and their life. So I asked Patricia about her childhood in the Yucatan in Mexico, where she grew up, and how place informs her sense of color.
Your second question is rather interesting because the answer is a bit complex. I grew up in what used to be a smaller town. Now is a this town has grown up a lot because it's a place where there is a concentration of people that come during this certain seasons to shop for fruit. The town is a big fruit producer. And so you can imagine all the colors throughout all the seasons that I was able to witness. And the town has grown up a lot in the last 15 years, which is sad, you know, because before we had this sense of a small town, we knew each other, and we could say hi. Now it just, every time I go, it's just different, disappointing for me. But I remember while I was growing up, my big influence definitely was the women. Both of my grandmothers were into food, and particularly one of my grandmothers was also into fibers. She loved doing cross stitch, and she introduced me into cross stitching. Also, one of my aunts, she was the first one that took me seriously, and I was so happy and proud. And I would go to her house, and she would set a little table for me, and she had needles and threads ready, and in some of my work she would outline for me where I should do the needlework, and she would sit with me for hours and teach me how to do very fine needlework. And so going back to the food, which was very important for me also growing up, one of my grandmother had a little food business, and she would cook for local parties, and I would go and help her. I just loved it. Just help wherever she needed some prep work. And I was a little kid, and she also would take me seriously like her helper, and she would count on me. The other grandmother, my dad's mother, she loved making sweets and using local fruit. And so all that comes to me when I'm working on my colorways. And as you can see, sometimes I use some of those names that brings me back memories. Sometimes I am in the mood of doing something like chocolate with mango and chili. I just did a colorway with those colors, you know, with those dyes, I would say. And so it's really fun going back to my childhood and take back with me all those elements that were very important for me, all those smells and all those flavors, and recreate something really fun that I just feel very familiar with and comfortable with. The third question that Sarah asked is, what part of the fiber art, what aspect is more important to me? And I would have to say that, I don't know. It's really hard to pinpoint anything that is more important, because everything is done in steps, and each step has its own importance. And I have learned that I can cut corners. I can cut corners on time, because, you know, the fiber needs to get dry. It needs to get dry, and I need to find something else to do. And also, if I try to rush things, it's just impossible for me, because I get to be very disappointed with the end results. And so I have learned to just take my time for anything that I do. Just go slow or go fast. It depends what kind of pace I am at that moment, and go with that. But I have also learned that taking small breaks is essential for my craft, because I need to keep things fresh. I need to bring new ideas. And also, I do the shop on Etsy, but I also have another small business that is with my clothing. And sometimes it can be a little bit overwhelming for me to have two things that I need to focus on that are both really important for me. And so I have to learn to just do one thing at a time and just focus on that and finish my project and continue with the next one. And after I finish a project, like a piece of clothing, a garment, I do need to take a little break. And I'm not saying like a week or something, or go on a vacation. It's just little mentally breaks. I can read a book, and I don't know, watch a program or something, just to cut that pace or that I'm into. And so if I have to think of something that is really important for me, it would be trying to keep that spark alive, having that imagination going, and keep that creative process going.
On my wheel right now is a BFL silk blend in a colorway called Papaya, dyed by Patricia. And this colorway was a part of the Fat Fiber sampler box for April. So I wanted Patricia to talk a little bit about being included in the Fat Fiber sampler box and what that process is like.
Well, Fat Fiber is a wonderful way to advertise our fiber business. Each month, the members of the fiber community get to choose a theme. And it can be about anything. It could be about gardening, for example. It could be about birds. It could be about butterflies. Anything that sparks our imagination. Once we choose a theme, then the fatties, that's how we call ourselves, get to start working on their samples. And it can go from bats, our bats, yarn, stitch markers, rubbing, you name it, buttons. And it's really fun because then we get to send those samples to Jessie and she puts them, she artfully put those boxes together, really beautiful. And then she offers them for sale and people literally, they fight for those boxes. And, I have gotten some of those boxes, which each month they are very different from each other. And it's very apparent how the colorways really play all together. A lot of the times I spin all the samples. And it's interesting to see how the colors, that they come from all different places and fiber artists complement each other, and it's really nice to get to sample and handle and touch all those fibers that I have never had an experience before. But going back to my papaya colorway, well, I did that colorway a few years ago, and I really liked it, but I never got to do it again just because I always like to continue to try new combinations. And I forgot about it until the month of April, we decide to go for the theme of how your garden grow. And the first thing that I thought is I have to do that papaya colorway again, just because I really like those greens and salmons and oranges, light oranges. And so that's what I did. It's just a color that I'm very familiar with because papaya grows almost wild in Yucatan. And we had it in our house growing up there and we ate it. And my grandmother, every time I used to spend the night there in the morning, she will wake me up and make me a smoothie with papaya. And she will also make a sweet with papaya that is really delicious. So that's about my sample. Is it any color that I feel challenged by? I don't know. I just know that sometimes I have to take my time before I can feel comfortable using certain kind of colors, like the Kelly Green, for example. I got it probably like 3 months ago and I still haven't used it. I probably don't know. I don't feel comfortable enough. I know that it can be very overwhelming and overpowering. So I'm taking my time. And I'm sure once I start using that color, I'm going to feel fine. And I'm going to say, what was the problem or why I had to wait so long? And it happens all the time. And it's not something that I plan. It's just sometimes I get colors that I just maybe I just don't like at that time or something. And then I fall in love with that color. And then I move on. Then I start using other colors. And I can see that in my work. Sometimes I go back to my Etsy shop and I go back to the first robin that I dyed. And it's amazing to see how my tastes have shifted from pinks or to blues. Blues was a color that it was a challenge for me. I don't wear blues for once. I wear lots of earthy colors. I love to wear black. And so So I had a hard time with blues. I usually tend to wear warm colors, and blue is a cool color that I had some challenges. And now I feel very comfortable. I use it, and I really love it. And I just made a colorway with mostly blues and some browns, and I really loving it. And I think the key is just give the color some time to settle down for me, so I can start thinking about it and create some fun colorways with it.
I asked Patricia some questions about having a shop on Etsy. A lot of us think about the customer experience of purchasing fiber and yarn, but I thought it would be interesting for Yarns at Yinhu listeners to hear from a shop proprietor. What are some of the responses that she's received about her products, and what kinds of things would she like customers to think about or to understand when they're making a purchase?
I think there are several kinds of responses that that my products get. And that can be, for example, when a possible customer decides to look at my shop, for example. I think that's a good response. Somebody that spends time looking and trying to find something that they might like to purchase, that's a great response. And then if they decide to purchase the product and they like it and they leave a wonderful review, a glowing review about something that they have purchased, that's another way. That's another great response. And I don't know, after that, I get to develop a relationship with my clients, with several of them. We kind of keep in contact, and also when that possible that client is local, I have met several of them, and I just love it. And they come every time I go to a fair, and they purchase something from me. After a while, I develop a relationship with my customers, which is wonderful, and we keep in contact, and once in a while we have these little chats, and to me it makes me feel that I'm doing something right, that these people keep coming and trying to contact me. It makes me feel good, and so that's the best response ever. Well, one thing that I would like the person to know that is purchasing or is thinking of purchasing one of my products is that I am the only person that runs the whole circus here. And that means that I am the person that does all the dyeing. I plan all the colorways. I do all the marketing, the purchasing, and everything in between. I have the person that run the errands, you know, whatever has to happen for the production of my end product. I am the only person that does that. And so sometimes for me to make an update on my Etsy shop, it might take a while because I don't have anyone that is going to help me. So that's one thing that I would like them to know. The other thing is that I do care much about my practices, about my resources, how I use the resources that I have. For example, I was very bothered by the use of so much plastic. I couldn't stand it. And I start playing with different ways of using other materials to wrap my robin, because it was bothering me so much to throw away so much wrapping plastic. And so I started experimenting a little bit, and I use cloth. I use muslin, and it didn't work because eventually the fabric will get saturated with color and then will leak into the rubbing. And then for a while I started using paper, and it did work for a while. It was parchment paper, and so the first couple times it will work fine, but then again the dye will start leaving marks on rubbing, and I was very disappointed. And then one day I saw some plastic again, so I went back to plastic, but this time I'm using the painter's cloth, and that I can reuse all over again. And so after each dyeing session, I just wash my plastic, just throw everything in a bucket and rinse it, and it's good to go again. So I'm very happy that I'm not putting all that plastic back into the garbage. It was bugging me so much, and it was silly. It was crazy and ridiculous. You know, that's about my practices and about me. I don't know. I always finding ways to make a better use of my resources without being too wasteful, because that bugs me a lot. I also would like them to know that I start dying because I am primarily a felter. And that's the reason how I got into dyeing, because I just couldn't afford to buy a lot of colors at the beginning to in order to do my work. And I started dyeing my own, and I had so many colors, and then eventually I have more than I can use. And because with my felting, I use very little wool, and I just decided to open an Etsy shop.
Finally, I asked Patricia some questions about her own projects. Does she ever get the time to spin and knit? And what is she looking forward to?
Well, it seems that I always have a project going on. It could be that I'm knitting something, or I'm crocheting, although I've been more into knitting lately. But I can be spinning for something that I have in mind. I always, every weekend, I think I have mentioned that before, I do my felting. And so I always changing my projects, but from day to day. Last night I was knitting also, I'm into knitting a blanket. I spun like a pound and a half of undyed pollard, very chunky. And so that's what I've been working on. I just need to knit one more skein, and I think I'm going to be done with it. And sometimes I have several projects. I just finished, I'm almost done with a nice circular shrug. And I'm very excited about it, because it took me about 3 tries to get the circle right. I blog about it because the first time when I start this project, I think I did a lot of increases, so the circle was coming with too many ruffles, and I didn't like it. And I think the second time also I had too many. No, the second time it was coming like a ball, and so I try a third time. And this time I got it right. And I'm very excited about it, and it fits really nice. I always have something in mind for spinning. Like I like to spin for a project sometimes, although at the end of this spinning, when I always have another idea that I want to do. It maybe happens with us spinners. And also, I'm very excited about this project that I haven't really talked about it because I'm still working on the logistics, but I've been invited to work with the Fibersheet project, which it's Fibersheet is a nonprofit organization that tries to promote and link local farmers with local artists. And the idea on this project is to use only local materials. Anything that is between 150 miles range can be used, and anything beyond that, it's not allowed. So I have to create a garment or several garments using only locally sourced materials. And it's exciting and challenging, and I'm trying to gather now my materials, and so I'm thinking about getting some cotton from Sally Fox, and I need to find also a good source of soft merino, because that's what I use for my felting. And my friend, for example, she's gonna be weaving some shawls that I'm gonna print, eco print also, and she has to use wool from local farmer from a local source. And so this is my current project, and I'm always felting on the weekends. As I said, I right now I know what I'm gonna be felting tomorrow, and so that keeps me going. And I also like to spin and try my, if I get a new fiber in my Etsy shop, I have to spin it, because it's a way for me to test what I'm doing wrong, what I need to improve. I don't want my fibers to felt. I don't want my fibers to also that the colors run after soaking. That will be a big disappointing for my customer. And so I it's good for me to try and spin anything that I am offering in my shop. So if somebody wants an advice, I know also what I'm talking about. So those are my projects for now. What am I looking forward to? Well, I think the first thing is to have a lot of laughs and discovering what I'm capable of. I like challenges, even though they scare me at the beginning, but I like to overcome that fear that I have for something. And then I discovered that it wasn't a big deal. I like that. I have to push boundaries. And that's what I would like to do also in my professional life. I would like to get more knowledge, to be more knowledgeable about what I'm doing, about my felting, about my dyeing. My husband and I have organized bird watching trips in the past, and we had to stop for a while because he was in the process of finishing a book that is now published, and he's so proud of. And that's our new project, to organize more local trips and also do some more trips in a different country. I would love to. I've been to Peru 2-3 years ago, and I just visited, and we would love to do some tours there. We have done in Costa Rica, Panama, Yucatan, Guatemala, and we would love to go back to that again, because it's a lot of fun, and it's a good way and opportunity for me to visit local co-ops, fiber co-ops. I did that in Guatemala, and it was fascinating to see other people's work in other countries. Personally, I think I'm looking forward to growing old with my husband, and just, as I said, just continue to be happy and be creative.
Thank you so much for listening to Yarns at Yin Hu podcast and this very special interview with Patricia of BZB Fibers. In the show notes, you can find links to all of the things that Patricia and I talk about, and also some photographs that she has sent along for me to include in the blog post that accompanies this podcast. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Curtis, burn out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Nature's ever get you high till your face is smile. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.